Big color, bigger savings. Sherwin-Williams Super Sale is here. Get 40% off paints and stains June 5th through the 11th with prices starting at $30.89. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Hi everyone, this is James and Dan. We are two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right, every week we sit down behind some microphones and share with each other the best things we've found out over the last 7 days.
Yes, so for instance, Dan, did you know that you cannot tie a knot in four dimensions?
I knew that's where I was going wrong. Interesting.
There are all sorts of reasons why, but we would go into them all on our podcast, along with loads of extra facts as well.
That's right. And if you want to check it out, No Such Thing as a Fish is available wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, everyone. This is James and Dan. We are two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. Every week we sit down behind some microphones and share with each other the best things we've found out over the last 7 days.
Yes. So, for instance, Dan, did you know that you cannot tie a knot in four dimensions?
I knew that's where I was going wrong. Interesting.
There are all sorts of reasons why, but we would go into them all on our podcast, along with loads of extra facts as well.
That's right. And if you want to check it out, No Such Thing as a Fish is available wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Walk the dog. Scrawled in handwriting across the top of a 6-page letter, hidden inside a LSAT prep book in Corey Richens' jail cell. Deputies found it while Corey was being treated for a medical episode. Inside, detailed instructions for her mother, Lisa Darden, to coach her brother on what to say if he testified. Have him tell the court Eric got drugs from Mexico, that Eric was an addict, that his death was an accidental overdose. Specific talking points, specific narrative, specific scripts for another human being to deliver under oath. When prosecutors flagged it as witness tampering, Corey didn't deny writing it. Instead, on a recorded jail call with her mother, she said, "Those papers were not a letter to you guys. They were part of a freaking book. I was writing this fictional mystery book about her fictional stay in a Mexican prison." She asked her attorney to smuggle in Crest white strips because her teeth were getting yellow from all the coffee they drink in the Mexican prison. That explanation is more revealing than the letter itself. And this is where we leave the room's metaphor behind. Because what's happening here isn't compartmentalization anymore. It is something faster, more automatic, more biological. This is a reflex. And when you see it for what it is, the rest of her post-arrest behavior stops being confusing and starts being a roadmap to how her brain is miswired. Watch what happens when she gets caught. She doesn't go silent, doesn't invoke her rights, doesn't simply deny. She generates a story instantly. Under pressure, on a recorded line she presumably knew was being monitored. Not a pause, not a stumble, a complete narrative. Fictional novel, Mexican prison, Crest white strips, produced in real time like antibodies responding to an infection. The threat enters the system. The system produces a defense automatically without conscious deliberation, the way you flinch before you decide to flinch. That's the psychology of what's happening in this jail cell. Not strategy, not planning, reflex. And understanding the difference is essential because strategy can be abandoned when it stops working. A reflex can't. It fires whether it helps or not. It fires when it makes things worse. It fires because that's what it does. The letter wasn't the first boundary she crossed from behind bars. Before deputies found it, she read another inmate's letter aloud to her mother over a recorded phone line. She held up multi-page documents on video calls so her mother could read or photograph photograph them through the screen. Each one a jail rules violation. Each one reckless. Each one done anyway, because the compulsion to maintain the narrative overrides the calculation of risk. The system that says, I need to control this story, is louder than the system that says, this call is being recorded. And that hierarchy, story over survival, tells you everything. For most people, self-preservation beats narrative. You stop talking when the lawyer tells you to stop talking. You follow jail rules because violating them makes your situation worse. The cost-benefit is obvious, but for someone whose identity is the narrative, protecting the story isn't separate from self-preservation. It is self-preservation. The story is the self. Lose the story, and there is no self left to preserve. Think about what it means to violate jail communication rules when facing an aggravated murder charge. The stakes could not be higher. Every misstep, every rule broken, every recorded call where something incriminating slips out, all of it feeds directly into the prosecution's case. A rational actor, someone driven by strategy rather than compulsion, would be the most careful communicator in the facility. They'd say nothing that wasn't vetted by their attorney. They'd follow every rule to the letter, because the cost of violating them is measured in years of their life. Corey did the opposite. She violated communication protocols repeatedly on recorded lines, aware they were recorded. That's not recklessness. That's a compulsion that overrides rational calculation that needs to produce and distribute narrative. A narrative that she believes is stronger than the need to avoid incriminating herself. Stronger than the need to stay out of deeper trouble. Stronger than anything. So the machine runs from a jail cell on monitored lines through smuggled letters. It runs because it has to, not because she chose to keep running it the way you'd choose to keep fighting a legal case, because it doesn't have an off switch. The threat exposure, loss of narrative control, the collapse of the constructed identity triggers the response. The response is produce a story, always, at any cost, from anywhere. The fictional novel, that whole defense deserves its own beat, because it's the reflex caught in slow motion. She's been found out. The letter is in the prosecution's hand. The call is on tape. And the explanation she produces is, I'm a published author. Authors write fiction. This was fiction. She doesn't even hesitate. She integrates the new problem into her existing self-narrative without any visible cognitive dissonance. Of course she's writing a novel. She wrote a whole book already, right? Children's book, ghostwritten. Why wouldn't she be working on another one? The logic flows in her head. The story holds, at least in the room where she's telling it. And it was generated in seconds, not rehearsed, manufactured on contact with the threat. The way a bruise forms on contact with a table edge. Not planned, just produced. Her attorney, Sky Lazaro, withdrew from the case after her firm reported an ethical issue. The specifics remain sealed, but the pattern of conflict with legal representation fits perfectly. A client who cannot accept being managed, who views the attorney not as an expert, but as a tool to be directed. The attorney says, you cannot orchestrate testimony. Let me handle strategy. And the client hears, you're shutting down my ability to control the story. Not a disagreement about strategy, an existential threat. And the reflex fires again. Push back, resist, find another way. Because stopping means silence, and silence means the story stops. And if the story stops, the self, the broken brain of Corey Richens, collapses. Think about that math. The math of that attorney conflict. Corey is facing aggravated murder charges that could result in life without parole. She's been in jail for months. Her defense attorney, the person standing between her and that sentence, walks away. An ethical issue is so severe that a firm willingly gives up a high-profile murder case rather than continue the representation. Most defendants would be terrified. Most defendants would adjust. but the psychological architecture we're describing doesn't process consequences the way most people do. The attorney leaving isn't a warning to change behavior. It's another person who failed to understand the mission, another member of the team that didn't get it. The reflex absorbs the loss and moves on to the next attorney, the next letter, the next story. The machine doesn't grieve its broken parts. It just replaces them. The letter also contains something that went beyond the witness tampering. Corey wrote that Eric's sisters have always been jealous of me because anything they could do, Corey could do better. Being a mom, college, stay-at-home wife until she built a $1 million company. The prosecution is jealousy. Eric's family isn't grieving. They're scheming. The judge isn't applying the law. He's biased. Everyone who opposes her does so because of who she is, not what she did. The opposition can't be legitimate. It has to be petty, personal, inferior, another antibody, another defense generated to neutralize a threat. Later in a message to someone, court findings described as an admirer, she wrote, "I will expose this county, the prosecution, the judge, the Richens, the investigation." It's not, "I will fight for my freedom," not, "I will prove my innocence." "I will expose them, the investigators, the prosecutors." The family of the man she was convicted of killing, they are the ones who have done something wrong. They need to be held accountable. She is the victim, and she will bring them to justice. That's not performance. This is what the reflex produces when it runs for 3 straight years without interruption. The story doesn't just defend against each individual threat anymore. It has grown into a complete alternate reality with its own internal logic, its own villains, its own righteous cause. The arrest wasn't justice, it was persecution. The evidence isn't proof, it's fabrication. The family raising her children isn't protecting them, they're stealing them. And every new development that contradicts her reality gets absorbed into the persecution narrative, making the conspiracy bigger, the injustice deeper, the eventual vindication more glorious. Notice the escalation pattern here. Before the arrest, grieving mother coping with an unexpected loss. After the arrest, innocent woman falsely accused by jealous in-laws in a corrupt system. After the letter was found, misunderstood author whose creative fiction was taken out of context. After the verdict, as we'll see, a woman whose very essence makes the conviction impossible. Each version bigger than the last, each requiring more suspension of disbelief, and each one generated not by conscious strategy, but by the same reflex, responding to bigger threats with bigger stories. The way a fever rises to match the severity of the infection. The stories don't even need to be consistent with each other. The fictional novel defense contradicts the innocent widow narrative, which contradicts the jealous in-laws narrative, which contradicts the corrupt system narrative. Each one was produced in response to a specific threat at a specific moment. None of them was designed to fit into a coherent larger framework because the reflex doesn't plan ahead. It doesn't check for continuity. It fires in the moment, generates whatever story neutralizes the immediate threat, and moves on. The wreckage of contradictory narratives left behind is invisible to Corey because she's never standing in two of them at the same time. She's always in the current one. And the current one in Corey's mind is always true. Nearly 3 years in a jail cell before trial. During that time, letters written, calls made, attorneys hired and lost, messages sent to admirers, innocence proclaimed to every person who would listen. The evidence mounted, the charges expanded, the prosecution's case grew stronger, and her conviction in her conviction in her own innocence by all available evidence never wavered. Not because she was brave, not because she was committed to a strategy, because the reflex doesn't consult the evidence. It doesn't weigh the odds. It fires every time, automatically, the way your heart beats without being asked. And that should make your skin crawl, not because she's dangerous. She's behind bars, but because the thing that makes her dangerous isn't a choice. It's not something she can decide to stop doing. It's not something a verdict can reach. The 12 people who convicted her, the judge who sentenced her, the prison that holds her, none of them can touch the mechanism. It's below the level where consequences land, below the level where evidence registers, below the level where other people's pain gets processed. A therapist who specializes in this kind of psychology will tell you that the hardest thing for families to accept isn't the behavior itself. It's the permanence, the realization that this isn't a phase. It's not something that will get better with time or consequences or treatment. The reflex was there before the murder, and it was there during the cover-up. It was there in the jail cell, and it will be there in prison decades from now, generating stories for whoever will listen. That's not a choice she's making. That's who she is. She sat in a courtroom for 3 weeks, silent, watching the prosecution tell a story she could not direct, could not edit, could not interrupt. For someone whose entire psychology runs on narrative production, that silence would be the closest thing to suffocation she has ever experienced. And what that silence looked like from the outside and what it was doing to her on the inside is something else entirely. That's coming up next. Be sure to press subscribe so you don't miss it. We'll continue our conversation in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Until then, my name is Tony Bruschi. Those links, by the way, in the description. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Hi, everyone. This is James and Dan. We are two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. Every week, we sit down behind some microphones and share with each other the best things we've found out over the last 7 days.
Yes. So, for instance, Dan, did you know that you cannot tie a knot in four dimensions?
I knew that's where I was going wrong. Interesting.
There are all sorts of reasons why, but we would go into them all on our podcast, along with loads of extra facts as well.
That's right. And if you want to check it out, No Such Thing as a Fish is available wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, everyone. This is James and Dan. We are two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. Every week, we sit down behind some microphones and share with each other the best things we've found out over the last 7 days.
Yes. So, for instance, Dan, did you know that you cannot tie a knot in four dimensions?
I knew that's where I was going wrong. Interesting.
There are all sorts of reasons why, but we would go into them all on our podcast, along with loads of extra facts as well.
That's right. And if you want to check it out, No Such Thing as a Fish is available wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, everyone. This is James and Dan. We are two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. Every week, we sit down behind some microphones and share with each other the best things we've found out over the last 7 days.
Yes. So, for instance, Dan, did you know that you cannot tie a knot in four dimensions?
I knew that's where I was going wrong. Interesting.
There are all sorts of reasons why, but we would go into them all on our podcast, along with loads of extra facts as well.
That's right. And if you want to check it out, No Such Thing as a Fish is available wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, everyone. This is James and Dan. We are two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. Every week, we sit down behind some microphones and share with each other the best things we've found out over the last 7 days.
Yes. So, for instance, Dan, did you know that you cannot tie a knot in four dimensions?
I knew that's where I was going wrong. Interesting.
There are all sorts of reasons why, but we would go into them all on our podcast, along with loads of extra facts as well.
That's right. And if you want to check it out, No Such Thing as a Fish is available wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, everyone. This is James and Dan. We are two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. Every week, we sit down behind some microphones and share with each other the best things we've found out over the last 7 days.
Yes. So, for instance, Dan, did you know that you cannot tie a knot in four dimensions?
I knew that's where I was going wrong. Interesting.
There are all sorts of reasons why, but we would go into them all on our podcast, along with loads of extra facts as well.
That's right. And if you want to check it out, No Such Thing as a Fish is available wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, everyone. This is James and Dan. We are two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. Every week, we sit down behind some microphones and share with each other the best things we've found out over the last 7 days.
Yes. So, for instance, Dan, did you know that you cannot tie a knot in four dimensions?
I knew that's where I was going wrong. Interesting.
There are all sorts of reasons why, but we would go into them all on our podcast, along with loads of extra facts as well.
That's right. And if you want to check it out, No Such Thing as a Fish is available wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, everyone. This is James and Dan. We are two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. Every week, we sit down behind some microphones and share with each other the best things we've found out over the last 7 days.
Yes. So, for instance, Dan, did you know that you cannot tie a knot in four dimensions?
I knew that's where I was going wrong. Interesting.
There are all sorts of reasons why, but we would go into them all on our podcast, along with loads of extra facts as well.
That's right. And if you want to check it out, No Such Thing as a Fish is available wherever you get your podcasts.